In the summer of 2007, Chris Hutchins had a job at a consulting firm in New York, where he lived with his girlfriend.
And then we kind of were like, New York's fun, but we knew we didn't want to live here forever.
So Hutchins requested a transfer to the firm's San Francisco office.
Moved out here, and that was about a month before I got laid off. I think in a maybe 2 or 3 month period, they probably cut back 10 or 20% of the company.
Downsizing, layoffs, lost jobs are all too common stories over the past few years. And they're really a part of most people's work experiences at some point in their lives. The difference? Hutchins is only 25. He says he never expected to have a layoff under his belt so early in his career, and he's not alone.
I have a friend named Brian who is 18 and has already graduated university with a bachelor's, started a job in the Bay Area, and within a month and a half was laid off. So he's 18, having already been laid off from his first professional job.
According to data from March 2010, the unemployment rate for 16 to 24-year-olds is at 18.5%. And nearly 1.3 million young people have left the labor force since 2007.
They were on a track, they were going, they were applying to graduate schools, or they were ready to get that great first job, and suddenly, bang, they're hitting a brick wall that they did not foresee.
Lynn Lancaster is the co-author of the book, The M Factor, How the Millennial Generation is Rocking the Workplace.
It can be a very discouraging time if you were on a fast track, if you had the grades and motivation and wherewithal to get a job someplace great or to get into a good grad school, and now you can't. It's shocking.
And it's happening to a group of people unaccustomed to failure. This is, after all, considered to be the coddled generation, raised in an era of escalating child safety laws, parents who never yell, and trophies for just showing up. This generation has many names, from the grousing Generation Me to the more objective Generation Y, or simply the Millennials.
A very optimistic, can-do, positive generation. They want to have great careers. They're very interested in giving back. They want to make a difference in the world. They are volunteering in record numbers.
In the U.S., whole generations tend to be stereotyped by how they behave in the workplace. And sure enough, as millennials have started entering the labor force over the past couple of years, the stereotypes are showing up in popular culture. Time after time, we see the same storyline. A baby boomer boss who's given his or her life to the job is confronted with a new employee, the upstart millennial who thinks they're God's gift to the workforce. Take the workplace coming-of-age story in the 2006 film The Devil Wears Prada. It features Anne Hathaway as an idealistic, ambitious, and somewhat smug Andy Sachs. Andy is a recent graduate who wants to write for The New Yorker, but takes a job at a fashion magazine as an assistant to a domineering baby boomer, hoping that working there will help her forge her way to better things. In this scene, Andy complains to a coworker about her boss.
But I'm just saying that I would just like a little credit for the fact that I'm killing myself trying.
Ugh, Andy, be serious. You are not trying. You are whining. What is it that you want me to say to you, huh? Do you want me to say poor you? Miranda's picking on you. Poor you, poor Andy. Hmm?
Lynn Lancaster says baby boomers raised their millennial kids to be like the Andy Sachs character, confident and picky when it comes to their work life.
We didn't just say, get the heck out and find a job, doggone it. We said, oh, go find something that's worth your time and your trouble. We've also de-emphasized working for a lot of our millennials. We've said to our millennial teens, oh, don't take an extra shift at McDonald's. I'd rather have you home for dinner. Or I'd rather have you take that AP French class and not work at all.
When millennials were growing up, the economy was fairly strong and consistent, so they didn't have trouble finding weekend jobs during high school, and they came to expect work to be readily available. They're entering the workforce feeling in control of their own destinies, but as with previous generations, the millennials are seeing that the state of the economy is what may ultimately define them as a generation.
You're listening to a two-part series called The Recession Generation, produced by Rena Palta at KALW Radio in San Francisco.
When business leaders began speculating about how the millennial generation would behave when it entered the workforce, they pointed to the generation's ambition, its idealism, and its competence. Contrast that image with that of Generation X.
Slackers.
Business consultant Lynn Lancaster says that Gen Xers, born between 1961 and 1982, started entering the labor market in about 1980.
Xers got hit with a lot of really bad stereotypes. For one thing, they were following in the heels of that great big baby boom. And boomers were competitive and successful and hard-charging and workaholics. And then Xers showed up with a little bit different style. And boomers were just completely taken aback by that. So there was a lot of friction there.
Lancaster says part of the conflict was just the natural way generations tend to feel about each other. Older generations always worry that young people won't work as hard as they do. And Xers didn't quiet the older generation's fears.
This is a generation that started lobbying for things like casual day, bring your dog to work day, flex time, working from home. And you could see how that ran smack up against these hard-charging baby boomers and these traditionalists who had very set ways of doing things.
The slacker reputation stuck with the Xers, and Lancaster says a lot of that had to do with the state of the economy when they graduated, the recessions of the early 1980s and 1990s.
So the leading edge of them couldn't find jobs right away. And it was the time that TV shows like Friends were coming out, where you'd see the Xers were sitting around in coffee shops with no discernible means of support and no future and nowhere to go.
Can I get you some coffee?
Decaf.
They just kind of sat around all day, and that was a little bit of the gestalt of Gen X, which is, I have all this education, but nowhere to go, and I'm aimless.
Thanks to the coming of the laptop, coffee shops went from places to hang out to actual places of work. And that's where I meet Enrico Moretti, professor of economics at UC Berkeley.
I had, as usual, I had my cake and my Earl Grey tea.
Moretti says it's no surprise that millennials are getting a slower start than they expected. Pampered or not, millennials graduated into the worst job market in two decades. Moretti says people who graduate college into a recession don't do so well at first. They underperform in terms of earnings, careers, and they don't get jobs as quickly as their predecessors.
But the most interesting, probably most problematic thing that we do notice historically is that the people entering the labor market in a recession, even when you see them 10 years later or 15 years later, even then, they're underperforming. And again, they have lower earnings, a higher unemployment rate, and lower career, less fast career paths. And this is, unlike the first fact, this is really surprising, because it means that 10, 15 years out, these people are still paying the price of having entered the job market at the wrong time.
Moretti says there are several possible reasons for this underperformance.
One reason is that there is a scarring effect that employers somehow don't take into account when 10 years after the recession, they're comparing two job candidates. One has been unemployed for 5 years and one has been unemployed only for 1 year. They don't really discount the fact that the first guy was unemployed for so long was not his fault.
Another possible factor is a decline in what's known as human capital. Human capital is a person's education, work experience, focus, and drive.
And it's well documented that being outside the labor force results in a depreciation of that human capital. Somebody who has been out of the job for 3-4 years is going to have an hard time. It's not going to be as productive as when he first lost the job. So that's also one component. And then a third possible component is maybe a psychological fact that being unemployed makes people, might make people less assertive in job search and less self-assured in interviews and things like that.
So what will happen to this massive, educated, idealistic generation? Millennial Chris Hutchins was laid off from his first job out of college. He says for him, the recession has been humbling.
My parents are always telling me, no, like, you have to work your way, you have to earn that. But, you know, we grow up in this society where, you know, we've got cell phones when we're 7 and we feel like we can do whatever we want. And we're starting to act like, you know, business people when we're, you know, in middle school, and we kind of feel like we're empowered. And so I think slowly, and what's happened during the recession is people realize that they're not.
Hutchins took his own layoff as an opportunity. He traveled with his girlfriend for 8 months, then came home to San Francisco and started working as a contractor, teaming up with other laid-off workers to bid for consulting jobs. He says his generation, whatever else it might be, is also entrepreneurial and is poised to rise to the challenges of an economy where you don't have so much job security and you don't retire with the company where you started your career.
My resume doesn't even really matter, right? Like, the people I talk to about work, I've never even shown my resume to. And so it's not a society that's based on what happened in the past. It's about what you're doing, and you usually get more creative when you're put in extenuating circumstances.
Lynn Lancaster says people like Hutchins will be okay. She thinks the recession won't be their greatest challenge.
One of the worst aspects of this generation is that the divide between the haves and the have-nots has really widened during their formative years. The U.S. dropout rate from high school is inching over 30%. 30% of our millennials will not graduate from high school. At the same time, jobs have gotten much more skilled in the United States. That means that the millennials who aren't completing an education have very little chance of being able to earn a living wage, and they are falling through the cracks, which is a huge concern for this generation.
And the same characteristics that make this generation so special, the confidence, the idealism, the optimism, turn sour when young people run up against consistent barriers to success.
I think we're developing an underclass of millennials who feel very discouraged, who feel very cut out of the world of success and the world of work. And then we have the haves who feel like the world is their oyster. They're going to really be able to do amazing things. And, you know, one of the things that has defined the U.S. has been the fact that we are great at working. And to a large degree, we like to work. We're good at work. And we find work that's pleasing to us, that we can excel in and get excited about. So when people get left out of that, think about what happens. Pride, the feeling you get from successfulness, the ability to support a family, the ability to create the American dream or have a good life for yourself, all that begins to fall away. And that carries with it many costs.
The truth of the matter is that the millennial generation may be defined less by its optimism than by its realism. Right now, that means figuring out how to use its education, technology, and confidence to make it through its current crisis and achieve its potential. For Cross Currents, I'm Rena Palta.